from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
And today we have a very special episode. It's another Bible Stories. Who knew that this is something that you'd be looking forward to, hearing stories about the Bible?
Stupid Bible.
It's a weird world with that the case. Although, here's the deal. The book we're doing is called the Book of Ruth, and it's like one of the shortest books in the Bible. So it's going to be a short show. Because we can't do the other one. We can't do Samuel's. We can't sandwich these two together. Samuel's massive. And that's its own whole other thing. But hopefully this one is going to generate a lot of discussion because, you know, it's one of those rare books where there's a woman in it. And they're talking about her doing stuff. And she's not a prostitute.
Yeah, there's a funny trend in the Bible where whenever a woman comes up and she's doing stuff, there's usually that subtext that she is or was or could be a prostitute. And I find that very interesting. It's kind of maybe it's kind of like... That just kind of gets in there because, hey, any woman that isn't just locked up in her house being a wife obviously must be a prostitute.
Oh, obviously. That has to happen. You know what I was thinking about? I was wondering that if perhaps the evolution of religion from polytheism to monotheism, and I do want to call it an evolution, not because it's an improvement, just because it's a kind of mutation, if you want. But if you think about it, let me ask you this question. What are the odds that if you go from having a shitload of gods to having just one, that you're going to end up with a really sexist society?
Well, what are you basing this on?
Well, I'm basing it on the fact that usually when you pick only one god, you got to have to give it a sex. So in that society, now you have the supreme being who happens to share only one sex. And I think that if that happens in that kind of evolution, what you notice is that it will move a society towards more sexism.
I suppose it's a possibility.
I think it's worth looking into. I mean, maybe if you've got some ethereal, sexless idea of what God is. But it doesn't even remove the fact that, generally speaking, everybody just uses he. And what kind of an impact did that have on fucking society?
I would say that it probably just has more to do with men being possessive bigots and just, you know, it's that old saying is that religion just reflects the values of the people at the time. And they just, you know, make whatever is most convenient for them. And these pieces of shit back then are like, well, you know, women shouldn't be doing anything but giving me babies and scrubbing my floor and cooking my food. God says they should do this.
See, here's the thing. I think that's an oversimplification. Saying it's the values of that time, because it's not just the values of that time, it's also inherited values from a time long ago. How many rabbis, just as an example, Jewish rabbis probably looked at the Book of Ruth and said, here's a good example of women doing whatever the fuck he thinks or his interpretation is. And now all of a sudden you have either a very liberal interpretation or usually not a very liberal one. What I mean by that is when the stories are suddenly, where the main character is suddenly male, and now all of the stories are just empathizing with this male main character who happens to be God, I'm like, I think that in a systematic way that's going to influence, even if you had a minor or even mildly strong, say, paternalistic or you know, male-centered attitude, I think it just continues to feed into it. I think it's one of those mechanisms that just feeds into certain prejudices, certain stereotypes, and all of those, and just ramps it up to like 11. You know what I mean? And I think, anyways, it was just something I was thinking about, especially when you read the Book of Ruth, and you realize that, okay, Book of Ruth reads a lot like a Greek play, all right? Because it's a Greek kind of play. Some people believe that it was written during the Hellenistic period of you know, after Exodus and shit like that. Remember, when these books are written, do not depict the fucking times they write about. You know what I mean?
Oh, like as far as it's never actually happening when they say it's happening. It's never written during that era.
Or more than that, like you ever look at like a medieval painting of, ancient Israel. It looks a lot like, say, I don't know, medieval wherever the fuck that guy was living at the time.
It's not like back in the day you could go on the internet and look it up or something like that. I mean, imagination was probably not what it was now.
Yeah, well, let's just say access to that material is quite limited. So, yeah, you're going to work with what you know. But I think that extends far beyond just artistic ability. You're just going to assume that, hey, everybody was acted the way that we act now, even though you're just like, nah, people don't really act the same way. There are marked differences. You would react pretty fucking differently than, say, somebody in the 14th century to a woman being burst into flames. Probably very different. Okay, let's start with this one. I want to get it kicking, because it's a short one, and it's not exactly the most entertaining of all of the Bible stories, by the way. I'm sorry if this one's going to suck.
Well, it seems like the Book of Ruth is kind of like a one of those parables that's supposed to put people's minds at ease and just kind of be like, look, here's the story of Ruth, and it worked out pretty well for her, and if you're in a similar situation, you can take comfort in the fact that, you know, we are all Ruth.
Right, and I think that it's a nice break from Judges, where we ended with just a sick amount of bloodshed, and then, you know, Samson tearing the fucking temple apart, and all these Philistines dying, and it's just like, that's awful.
And that was like the Transformers blockbuster of the Bible, of the Old Testament. There's some action going on there. It was pretty exciting.
There's going to be some more action going on. There's plenty of other chapters. David's got plenty of action, and a lot of sex.
This is more like The Notebook. I wouldn't know, because I've never actually seen The Notebook. I just mean like a fucking chick flick.
A chick flick I've never fucking seen or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't seen it either. It just didn't really. I've watched chick flicks before, but The Notebook seems a bit too saccharine for me. Tis not for me. Let's get into it. So we begin sort of like with a once upon a time. So this is a nondescript period because it's a fable. And it's at a particular time when there's a famine going on. So God is rewarding the Jews with a famine because of all their, you know, great work. And there's this one Jewish guy. He decides that he's going to move to Moab, which is to the east of Jordan. So it's pretty close. It's like their neighbors, right? So it's like deciding to move to Canada because, you know, America sucks. So he decides to move over to Moab with his wife and his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. So this guy's called Elimelech, if, you know, say that three times fast. Anyways, and his wife is called Naomi. And they stay there for a while, but, you know, hey, it's life in the fucking past, so it's dangerous. And all of the men die. So Elimelech dies. His sons die, and they leave behind the daughters-in-law, who are actually Moabites, so they're foreign chicks. They married some of the foreigners. Now, if you don't remember who the Moabites are, by the way, I think we're going to have to sort of like pause it there, and I want to sort of like put in your minds how foreign the Moabites are, okay? Do you remember way back the story of Lot? Remember Lot back in Genesis?
Was he the one that talked to the donkey?
No. No, that was Balaam, I believe. That was a wizard. An evil wizard who got killed.
He got his.
But yeah, no, Lot was the guy with the two daughters that got him drunk and fucked him because God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah.
Oh, how could I forget that? That's like one of my favorite stories ever.
Right, okay. Well, one of the sons from that disgusting union was called Moab. And that is the story of where Jews thought the Moabites came from.
Well, I mean, it's nice to know that they have a nice backstory for the Moabites.
Yeah, it's really a nice one. Oh, you are the incestuous result of a disgusting union.
I always enjoy that when the Bible has a story like, and then God took a shit and they were the Canaanites.
Yeah, pretty much. So those are the Moabites. So you can guess generally how they're perceived. But remember, okay, these are all Canaanites. Whether they're Jews or Moabites, they're just tribe names, right? It's like the put me in a lineup with a bunch of Americans, and I dare you to point out the Canadian. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we're separate, but we're pretty much the fucking same.
There is that slight smell of maple syrup, though. Just very slight
poutine.
On all of us.
Yeah.
Well, poutine is more of a Quebec thing. But
no,
they're
trying to make it the national dish now.
Yeah, it ain't happening. Try to get a poutine in Toronto, and you'll see how far we have to go before that happens.
There is poutine here in Calgary, all right?
Like proper with curds and everything?
With curds. I don't know if the gravy's all that good. And I just feel like the curds are from Quebec by the time they get here. You know? Curds are best, like, day after.
Pretty much.
You need to make noise when you chew them. Maybe if you've never had curds that make noise when you chew, you ate curds wrong. That's what I got to tell you. All right, let's get back to the story. Stop talking about poutine. Let's go back to the land of Judah, which is now doing better. God has stopped this famine. I guess he took pity on all the crying Jews, as he normally does when he hears just enough lamentations. Hint, hint. Lament more, apparently, if you want his attention. So now Naomi decides that she's going to go back home to her own people because, you know, now she's got nobody left except for her daughters-in-law. And one of them is called Oprah and the other is Ruth. You know, like Oprah Winfrey, yeah.
No. It's not like Oprah. It's Orpah. It's almost Oprah.
Oh, right. It's Oprah.
No, Orpah.
No, it's not Orpah. It's how's it spelled?
O-R-P-A-H. Orpah.
Is it really?
Yep.
Ah, fuck me. Okay, so...
Well, I mean, I thought it was Oprah, too. I was looking at the whole, like, they have, like, a whole family tree of everything. And at first, I'm like, Oprah? Huh, so that's where that name comes from.
No, Oprah actually comes from Judges. That was, like, the name of the tree that Gideon goes to.
So it's still a religious name.
Oh, yeah. Oprah is still a religious name, for sure.
Okay, so...
But I thought it was Oprah from that motherfucking tree. But no, I guess she's a Moabite, right? So she wouldn't be fucking... Name similar, even though it's like a word. I mean, Naomi means something, right? All of these names mean something. They have, like, individual meaning. So they're not just names.
Well, is it kind of like in an action film, they will give, like, a guy a name like John Charger because they're trying to give him the impression of being, like, a take charge, doing things kind of guy and... Something like that. So each of the names is kind of associated with, you know, what their role is in the story.
I think. Well, I was trying to compare it to Greek mythology because, you know, when we talk about narcissism, or we talk about the echo, these are names, right, from these mythologies. Naomi just means pleasant. So a woman named Pleasant. You know, that's her name. Now, when she goes back to Judah, by the way, with Orpah, sorry. God, I fucking keep pronouncing it wrong. Orpah leaves. So she basically be like, I'm out of here. I'm going to go find a new husband. But Ruth decides to stay behind. And she makes like this really passionate plea. Be like, no, you cannot send me back. And I am taking to your people and I will become one of you. And I'm coming with you. Because you've been so kind and blah, blah, blah. And this, by the way, is like, stop the fucking presses moment. All right? This is apparently so important that there's a word that you need to know that's associated with this. Okay? Hesed. This is a big word. This basically means that you are acting nicer than is needed. This is a new thing.
Like it's above and beyond the call of duty kind of thing, beyond, yeah.
Yeah, the Book of Ruth, in fact, is kind of like that's the subtext, where everybody's doing more than they should. And you're supposed to be like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And you're just like, dude, that happens all the fucking time. It's just that all your other characters were so villainous that they barely did what they needed to. I mean, like, even if you were related, it didn't matter. You'd be like, I'm going to fucking kill you. Abel, fuck you. God loves you more. You're like, jeez. Yeah, everybody's got some real attitude problems. So Ruth decides to come along. So Naomi and Ruth make it all the way back to, you know, the supposed kingdom of Judah. That'll be in the book. We'll talk about why that's a supposed thing. But anyways, they return back home, and now Naomi just basically wants to be called Mara now, which means bitter bitch, because she's really fucking bitter at what God did to her. You get what I'm saying with names here? Yeah. But like I said, mythology. So yeah, they're back. And everyone is sort of like, I don't know, trying to cheer her up because she's morose or something. Now, she's living with Ruth. They're together. And that's unusual, by the way. It's unusual enough that there's plenty of Jewish scholars now that are like, they were lesbians.
It's an interesting job to be a Jewish scholar and to go through the Bible and be like, oh, yeah, lezzing out, totally. See this scripture here? That means they were scissoring.
Oh, yeah, total scissoring. In fact, well, here's the one thing that I found just hilarious about studying the book of Ruth is that you're going to, you know, I've read a few books and the interpretations are crazy where you're just like, at one point, somebody's just making these declarations saying like, well, this represents the softening attitudes towards the Moabites. And you're just like, it's a story, bro. Story. I think it's, I mean, did you ever write a story? If someone had to interpret the story you wrote, what the fuck kind of things do you think they'd say about it? I think all kinds of crazy shit that you didn't intend. You were just like, I'm bored. I'm going to write this story. And I mean, who knows if you even wrote it. You're probably, I'm bored. I'm going to plagiarize someone else's story.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it could be any name in there. It's kind of like that 50 Shades of Grey when it started out as Twilight fan fiction. And then they just changed the names for legal purposes when they released it properly. And so, you know, in this case, it could be the Moabites. It could be the Canaanites, the Levites. It could be anybody. It doesn't really matter.
And that's a good example that a story doesn't have to be good in order for it to be replicated. Mm. It just needs to be popular. These are two very different things. Good and popular. Not always linked. Okay, so let's go back. So they're back in town, and all of a sudden, you know, they don't have a job, they don't have any money, and because her husband and all the men are dead, Naomi cannot reclaim her land. The land is vacant, right? Because there's a law for all Jews that you're just like, all the land has to stay in the family. You can rent it out, but you are not allowed to sell it. It has to stay. But you can't have any access to it if you're a woman. You can, though, if you have a son, you know, which is probably why Jewish mothers are so pushy. I think I solved it, boys and girls. It's like you can't have a life unless there's a man involved. And if he's your son, you can bet your ass you can control his ass.
Yeah, you can basically drive him around.
Yeah, drive him around until he goes nuts.
Get into the pilot seat and just make him deal with everything, because you're not, basically, you're just pulling the strings.
So yeah, they're landless, and they, you know, woe is them. And again, Naomi's bitter. That's her new name. So Ruth decides she's going to go out and plow the fields and work to try to make money, which is, again, very unusual. But she's a foreigner, and you know, over there, that women take probably more part in government and other things too, rather than the Jews are like, nope, don't even hang around if you're on your period. Go to the forest and get the fuck out of here. So, very different attitude towards women. But she's, you know, stranger in a strange land. She decides, I'm going to go work. And she just coincidentally happens to go work in the field of an actual distant relative of Naomi's, who also happens to be the richest man in the town. And his name is Boaz. And Boaz is kind of like, you know, he's a middle-aged man, probably going on in years. Seems like a friendly guy. All the workers really like him. You know, the kind of rich person that isn't Mitt Romney, that kind of person. Mm. Someone you can like. Someone that you can actually be like, wow, he doesn't treat us like total dirt. So when Boaz sees Ruth working in the fields, he goes over to her, and I guess he recognizes that she's not from around here. She's foreign or something like that. She's like, oh, you know, what are you doing here? And she explains the story, and then he's impressed. He's like, wow, you didn't even need to stick around with this old hag. You could have just sort of like probably found a new husband and just had a new life, but this is amazing. You came over here and you're a foreigner. No one likes you because, you know, you're probably the descendant of a unholy union or whatever. Whatever prejudicial beliefs we have, he says. But he's like, why don't you work away from where everybody, all the other men are, to avoid harassment and rape? And you know, you can get, and he even tells his workers, leave some stuff behind so she can gather it after, and she can, and it works so well that she has like this giant bushel of barley, and she goes home, and she tells Naomi, like, look at this, and Naomi's like, oh my God, this is so great, what happened? And when Ruth tells her the story, Naomi's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to take a bath, because you probably smell like shit working all day, and who knows when the last time, yeah, this woman's had a bath. So take a bath, and we're going to perfume you to shit, which basically means it's like makeover time, right? Gives her total
makeover, makeover.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a makeover time. Insert montage here, and now she's looking hot, so she says, okay, here's what you do. You go to Bo's, and you find that, like, you follow him. And when he goes to take a nap, because he's rich, right? Rich people take naps. When he goes to take a nap, follow him in his house and then lie at his feet, is what she says. Now, remember when I was saying that, you know, you can interpret this in a whole number of ways? Do you want to know how many ways it is interpreted?
I imagine that every single way in which you could say, like, This means that she sucks on his toes. This means she, like, rubs up against his legs. This means that he, like, I'm sure there's many dirty interpretations for what.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of dirty interpretations. So Boz wakes up and he's, like, a bit groggy. And he's like, oh, who the fuck are you? Because, you know, he's got, like, what is he, a fish? Like, he has no memory for faces. I guess that every foreigner looks alike. He doesn't know who she is. And she's like, I'm Ruth, and you are my family redeemer, and protect me, and put a blanket over me, which is a kind of subtext of saying, take care of me, I can't take care of myself, and because I'm a woman, right? And I have no rights in this world. So Boz is like, yeah, I think Ruth is probably pretty striking, and like most of us, he probably has some jungle fever. Always the accents are hot. So he's like, all right, well, I'll try. But the deal is there's other people who have a better claim to you. That's another family member who's more closely related. Because if you remember back in Leviticus when we were just talking about all the laws there? I don't know if you remember that episode. But one of them is that if your brother dies, you have to fuck his widow to just ensure that there's a kid. But look, for all of this is for property reasons, man. This is the only way these people have determined property rights are supposed to descend from males alone. So, pragmatically, you've got to fuck someone who's bereaving, even if they really dislike you. But it's not really up to them. They're just a womb machine that you insert your gross, disgusting liquid inside. So, Ruth goes back home, and Boz calls a meeting to all the elders, including some of those guys that are apparently more closely related to her. And he's like, okay, here's the deal. What's your name? Because the guy has no name. His name is literally has no name. So has no name is told, you can marry Ruth, and then you'll take on this property. But you'll have to, because he's not a family member, he has to pay the price of the property to the family, which is the woman. So there's a financial transaction going on here. I don't know if anybody understands the subtext of the story, but essentially what Naomi has done is she has taken her daughter-in-law and prostituted her out in order to reclaim her land. This is the negotiation that's happening. So the redeemer's like, I can't really afford this. When the no-name redeemer guy, he's like, I can't really afford this. And besides, if I have kids of this woman, then, you know, there'll be all kinds of issues with inheritance and blah, blah, blah. And what a mess that'll be. So he's like, nah, fuck it. I already got probably a few wives by now. He doesn't need the extra hassle. So Boz and Ruth are free to marry. And they have a kid. And this kid, they just basically hand over to Naomi. It's like, oh, well, you know, here's a freebie. You can have him now. His name is Obed. And he is your redeemer now, which basically means he's your meal ticket, and you're not going to die too soon.
Here is your puppet man, so you can operate in society properly.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if you follow the fan page, you will have noticed that I put a link to this interesting article where they were using killer whales to study the effects, like why does menopause happen in women? This is like, there's no other ape species that has this menopause thing. Like, we're the only one, so why the fuck does it happen? This is kind of curious. But what they found was one of the reasons, or at least one of the indications, the interesting corollaries, is the fact that males will live longer if their mothers live longer. So I think it's a kind of mutually beneficial arrangement here. Mothers and sons. There's something going on there. Maybe the reason why your mom has her menopause is because, you know, she's going to stick around for longer.
Because you're a bad son. You gave her menopause.
You're a horrible son. Yeah. So it could be just that there's a special relationship there. And definitely in the Jewish culture, that special relationship is to use you to broker land deals. So I feel special. Here's the thing about why Ruth is mentioned, by the way, because this doesn't seem like an interesting story apart from the fact that, hey, everyone's acting unusually nice for a change, right? It does seem a little bit unusual considering the last stories that I've been talking about. I don't even think there's one murder. The only murdering that's done is actually by God in terms of the famine and whatever natural disasters wiped out Naomi's family.
And even then, he's not implicitly like, this seems like a pretty God is hands-off story.
Yeah, you know, apart from ensuring that Ruth gets pregnant, because God always takes credit for all the births. It's like, God gave you a gift. Really? I think I did most of the work. You know? Mm. Did you stimulate my organ there? Is that what happened? I know the Holy Spirit's supposed to be all over the place, but this is private. Get out of here. So yeah, everybody was acting nice, and it's definitely one of those, hey, everything seems to be nice. And Ruth is the great grandmother of King David, which is going to be one of the future episodes. It's going to be in Samuel 2 and Kings, and I think it's part of Chronicles. David's going to be like the guy that just won't go away. He's going to be like 3 or 4 shows in. You're going to be sick and tired by the time we're done with this guy. So that's the story of his great-grandmother, a foreign chick.
And it seems kind of like the story, again, it plays on this idea of, hey, this is how you should behave. And when everybody kind of takes that extra step, then things just tend to work out.
Things just work out right. When you do the right thing, things work out. Except, of course, if there's a famine or, you know, myriad of other things.
And, of course, doing the right thing isn't just, you know, the romantic Boaz gets with Ruth. It's also, well, you know, you got to observe those cultural things that other guy had first option. It's like, it's kind of like a sports free agent. You gotta go and check with the other club that still has an option on this guy's contract before he could sign with the other people.
Yeah,
so it was all done.
A free agent.
Yeah, exactly. It was all done very well. And in the end,
it all worked
success.
Out, I guess. You know, a little bit of shrimping goes a long way, is that what I think that the lesson of the story goes.
Yeah, seriously, have a bath and rub up against a rich guy's feet. Guys love that.
If that's really, you know, if we're to take it literally, if we're not to take it literally, suck his greasy cock and then he will marry you.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Do you think, really? I think what lie at his feet means is that when he's sleeping, you stimulate his already erect penis so he ejaculates, and then he'll wake up feeling great and be like, what's going on? I'm happy now. Which is kind of like, if you're going to suggest being in a guy's good graces, that, you know, waking up to a hot chick jerking you off, it's a pretty good morning.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it pretty much sets the tone for a happy relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it is encouraging. And you're just like, is this going to always be like this? Of course not. Once you get married, that's done. But that's an entirely different thing. Well, I think that sums up Ruth. We won't go into detail. Like I said, it's a short, short fucking book. But the reason I think that it's definitely not written by the same people who wrote, say, Judges or Joshua is because it's nice. And it's a different authorship. It sounds Greek, doesn't it? You know, not Greek tragedy, but just one of those cheesy Greek love fucking stories. you know.
Yeah, exactly. It definitely got some different influences than some of the more violent parts of the Bible.
Right, which we'll get to soon enough. The next episode, well, not the next show, the next time we do Bible stories, it'll be Samuel. And there's lots of, you know, tragic shit that happens there, gossipy stuff. It's a juicy one, let me tell you something. Now, I want to talk generally about the book. So for people who are interested in, you know, Bible stories and realize that part of the Bible stories thing is a marketing gimmick for the book, it's going awesomely well. I've tried to get everybody so far who's gotten the 250 or higher option, start sending in your pictures, by the way. And by pictures, here's what I want you to do. Not just a profile of your face, a couple of different angles. Give me a few good ones. But you don't have to go to a professional photographer. Just have a friend with a camera, take a bunch of dynamic angles in a place where you're not in a dank basement, and it should be fine.
Well, maybe it could also work that, you know, they just friend you on Facebook, and then you can look through hundreds of photos of them.
That's another good idea. And for those of you, by the way, that purchased one of the, you know, did any of the pre-orders, and you're just like, man, I wish I would have gotten the 250. Well, there's still 9 spots left, actually. And I've been doing some payment options. Already a couple of people have jumped on board of this. So you can be, there's still a chance for you guys to be in the book. It's not over. And, you know, we can start, the payments start like, you know, as low as $25 a month if you start like right fucking now. So it's, and if you saw, like, if you go on the website right now, you're going to see some of the sample artwork that I've already done. So I've started to sketch everything out and even go back and to just do the ones, the chapters that I've already written. Because my new thing is that now when I write a chapter, I kind of want to do the drawing right after as well. Because I think it helps cement it in my mind. You know, I have a visual image of Ruth. I have a visual image of Samson or of Moses. And it will be all of you. It'll be weird, but it'll be useful. Now, there is one other thing, too. Speaking of that, is that I am looking for a couple for my Adam and Eve drawing. I want a couple. So if you already purchased one and you're just like, oh, I want my husband or my girlfriend to be part of it, we can negotiate something. Because seriously, I want a twofer for that one because it's so great. The drawing is called Adam Blaming Eve, and it's kind of like Adam going like, what the fuck? It was this bitch. It's a great fucking painting that I'm imitating there. And I'm like, who doesn't already have that kind of thing in their relationship going, it wasn't me, it was her. So
the great thing about it is you don't even, this isn't some kind of seedy thing so that Jake can get pictures of you naked, Garden of Eden style.
No, I just want your face. I've already drawn the naked body. Now
the
I want
to put
penis
is already there.
Well, actually, most of these paintings are pretty tame. I've been covering up the cooters just like the paintings because I figure, you know, you can show the breast. You can even sometimes show the penis, but if you show a slit, it seems people are like, whoa, no slits.
It inflames our passion.
It does. What a simple line can do, something that almost looks like a happy face. Yeah, so the Bible Stories is going good, by the way, so that means regularly you guys are going to be getting Bible Story shows. That's with all the interviews too that are coming, and we're back to a regular schedule for the first time in years. I actually think we've actually surpassed the deadline, you know, like how long we've maintained schedules for. It's pretty impressive. I think you guys should be happy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of normalcy returning to everything. It's good.
Yep, it's good. And like I said before, progress is on the book is amazing. If you didn't do any of your pre-orders before and you kind of want to be included, I don't even mean just the big option to get your face in, but any of the others, message me as well. We didn't close the door on that. It's just that Indiegogo campaigns need to end. But the funding part of it does not need to. If you want to pre-order your book now, like just do so. And like I said before, send in your photos so I can start to sketch you guys. You know what? I'm even surprised that everybody hasn't jumped on. Did you see the one where I just drew Samson ripping off that lion's face in half?
No, I did not.
Well, see, here's the thing. I'm like, who doesn't want to have a photo of them or a picture of them, drawing of them, ripping a lion's face off?
It is pretty badass.
It's so badass. You're even going to want this in your living room. Because you're just going to be like, I know that if I couldn't draw, I'd probably be very interested in a drawing of myself, you know, wrestling something impressive. But because I can draw, you can't actually do that, because then it just seems ridiculous. You're just like, oh, well, why did you do that? Of course you can do that, so why did you do it? It's a weird paradox. Other people have to draw you doing something that's ludicrous and impressive that you will obviously never do.
Otherwise, it's just self-serving.
Right. Otherwise, you're just sort of... You're 10 times more arrogant and self-centered than Rembrandt, and nobody wants that.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy! All right, well, you know, we're going to catch everybody. Next show is going to be the Quiet Company interview. And then after that, I'm going to have another interview with a bunch of other atheists. There's a convention happening soon, Skepticon, which I was invited to, but unfortunately they can't afford to fly me over there. So instead I'm going to be interviewing all the organizers, because that's about as good as we can get. Because we're still a tiny, pathetic group that just can't afford awesome things. But there's going to be a whole podcast about it. So look forward.
That works.
All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.